One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast live from Wimbledon on the penultimate day of the championships where, among others, and we will talk about all of them, but Markéta Vondrousova is a Wimbledon champion. Those Czech lefties, eh? They're pretty pesky around these parts, aren't they? She is the first ever unseeded women's Wimbledon champion. She was the first unseeded finalist since Billie Jean King, but of course that year Billie Jean didn't win the title, so Vondrousova takes it in two straight sets over Ons Jabeur, and there is so much to talk about. Matt, you're going to have to do most of the talking for the first 5 minutes because David was in a commentary booth, honestly, about 90 seconds ago.
Yeah,
it's some effort, David.
Well, I feel like fitness is a question of recovery speed. And so, you carry on.
Thoughts and feelings, Matt.
Oh, my thoughts and feelings. So many. So many. That is, I think, one of the most emotional tennis matches I've ever watched, actually, and been so affected by. You know, I really, really want to make sure in this podcast that we give Markéta Vondrousova her due. And she played an incredible tournament. Her story is unbelievable, having only won two matches on grass before this grass court season. She's now the Wimbledon champion. It is mind-blowing, and she played a great, great final. But I must say, I'm very, very sad for Ons Jabeur. I found the final an incredibly tough watch. And, yeah, I had to go for a little walk around the grounds after it had finished just to sort of clear my head a little bit. It was really affecting.
Yeah, we've been a bit anxious about this one, actually. I mean, not actually anxious, but just how to express the things we want and need to say about Ons Jabeur without taking anything away from Markéta Vondrousova, who played a fantastic match today. And I honestly think against a lot of other opponents, Ons Jabeur would have found a way to do what she did against Sabalenka and Rybakina in the previous two rounds, but she didn't today, quite frankly, and there are a lot of reasons why she didn't and how she didn't. But let's talk about Markéta Vondrousova first. She didn't blink. Did not blink. I mean, she played, in Ons Jabeur's words in the press conference not that long ago, she played the right match today.
Yeah, I think the only time she blinked, really, was in the first two games, and she went 2-love down. And Jabeur had a point for 3-love. And I thought at that stage, I didn't really get to see the first two games, but I saw the third and I saw the fourth, and then there was one of them was the really long one, several deuces, and I felt as though that could have been the difference between it tail spinning away for Vondrousova and Jabeur just having a great time. I really felt that was a possibility at that point, that she could just think, I've cracked this, I feel great, and just gone downhill, and Vondrousova could have struggled to get into the match at all. It's so easy to do that. And I actually think she showed immense grit in that situation, did Vondrousova, to not allow that to happen, to dig into her own game. And what her own game does is make you beat her, because she's got such great racket skill and control, whereas maybe a big hitter might just be an unforced error fest. Vondrousova isn't, and so she just trusted her own game, to bring her back into it and actually allowed Jabeur's doubt and nerves to kick in and become a factor. I mean, I think it was a brilliant performance from Vondrousova, absolutely first class. But I agree with you. It is, Jabeur has done such an incredible job of bringing everybody in to her story, making you feel what she feels through the Netflix documentary, through all of her interviews, for our on-court stuff, through giving hugs to people that everybody sees, showing people that she needs them. She wants them. She wants to be reassured and that it's going to be the best moment ever if she wins. But frankly, it's kind of one of the worst ever if she doesn't win. And that ends up making her loss feel something for everybody who's witnessed it as well. Even though we're happy to see Vondrousova getting the moment of her life, it is one of those.
It was a very mature performance from Vondrousova. Amazing to think that she's the 24-year-old and Jabeur the 28-year-old with more experience. I couldn't believe how level-headed Vondrousova was today.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we've just come out of the press conferences, which we'll talk more about. But Ons Jabeur's felt like a runners-up press conference.
Oh,
and
it?
Then some. You know, it was heavy, it was emotional, it was sad. Whereas Marketa Vondrousova's was so low-key. And I think that contrast probably tells you a big reason about why the match went the way it did. Because, yeah, as David was saying, Vondrousova was pretty tight in those first few games. You know, we were watching the backstage scenes and she was jumping up and down. It wasn't like a Rafael Nadal intimidating jump.
Matt said, those aren't the right kind of jumps.
It was a nervous energy jump. Yeah. She just needed to be
moving. She's been
brought
up on Alcaraz and Nadal.
But, you know, I think once Vondrousova got through those first six games, which Jabeur had game point in all of those first six, you know, she could have won all of those games. But once Vondrousova got through it and it was more or less level, I think she started to really come into the match and play really, really well. And I think maybe Jabeur, whose tennis was sort of passable for those first few games, maybe felt like, oh, okay, she's starting to play now. I'm tight. I haven't taken advantage of the games and the period where she was really tight, and it just all ran away from Jabeur after that. But I think there's a really important point about the style of play that you've mentioned and Ons Jabeur mentioned in her press conference. Vondrousova was so different to the players that Jabeur had played in her most recent matches. You know, they were hitters. And Vondrousova is she's a player, isn't she? She manoeuvres the ball around the court. And she was giving Jabeur time, you know, because she hits the ball that much slower than Rybakina and Sabalenka. And given the sort of chaos going on in Jabeur's head, I think the last thing she wanted and needed was time. You know, she had time to think, she had time to do the wrong stuff. You know, she wasn't just reacting, she was having to make stuff happen, and her nerves, her tightness just wasn't allowing that to happen. And Vondrousova, so cunning and so deceptively good, and mixing up the spins and the slices and moving brilliantly, defending brilliantly, whereas Jabeur's feet were heavy and her arm was heavy. And it was just, given the circumstances, it ended up just being a nightmare opponent, I think, for Ons Jabeur.
It's amazing to think that Jabeur led 3-1 in both sets, because it never felt like there was a moment where she was in command of this match. Now, at 3-1 in the first set, I feared she might be. And I say that because when I watch the opening stages of women's finals, my experience of them is always coloured by my anxiety for them being decent matches. Because if they're not, the fact that they're best of three sets, they can be over quite quickly. And I know what kind of commentary that induces in a lot of the, particularly the casual tennis watching public, but the non-casuals as well. And of course, the chat should be, women should get to play best of five sets rather than, isn't women's tennis dreadful and one-sided? But anyway, that's a separate discussion. My experience of those matches is always anxious. I always want them to be toe-to-toe. I don't really want to see anyone take the lead, because that increases the risk of a one-sided match. So when Jabeur went 3-1 up, I thought, oh my goodness me, this could be really one-sided for Jabeur. I just don't want that. But actually, taking away that the filter of sort of generalised anxiety about misogyny, and she never felt in command of the match. Every moment where you thought, okay, she's got this now. There was a moment, David, at the start of the second set, I think when she broke back for one all at the start of the second set, you texted, Ons is back in the room. And I punched the air. I was like, yeah, this is the moment. This is the moment she does what she did against Rybakina and Sabalenka. But it was so frail, wasn't it?
And I really thought that was going to be an important moment. She'd lost 23 of 27 points at that period when Vondroušová came from 2-4 down in the first set to be 40 love up in the second set. But it wasn't just that Jabeur ended up winning that game and getting it back on track. It was the way she did it. She did it with some fun points.
Mm.
Like, I thought it was going to loosen her up. She hit this lovely backhand pass. I think there was a lob in there as well. And I thought, oh, okay, as David expressed, that's the Ons Jabeur that she needs to be, that she needs to be that relaxed, I think, to get back into the match. But it was fleeting. It you know, she did end up capitalising on that a little bit and building a small lead in that set, but it never felt like the real Ons Jabeur was there, other than just for a couple of moments when she did get that initial break back.
Mm. Yeah, I spent a lot of time, as I'm sure you both did, just looking at her body language. And trying to understand it, trying to understand what's going on in her mind. And I didn't attend the press conference you guys did, so you perhaps will be able to put a bit more explanation to this. But I was watching her at the end of the first set, and she left the court, which is sensible, but she left the court looking lost. And I'm thinking, okay, you need to reboot and come again. And she came back on, and she did have that period of getting back into it, and there were a couple of fist pumps, but they were hopeful. And she looked ashen-faced to me. She looked like, I've frozen. I can't do it. I don't know what to do. This is all going wrong. I can't play. She's going to win. That's what it came across to me as. And I thought, is there anything anybody can do in that situation for themselves, from the outside? I have no idea. And every individual is different, but she froze.
The problem is what was happening in her mind, I think, right? Rather than the way she was expressing it. What she was expressing was a physical manifestation of what was happening in her mind, which was utter panic. You know, what we love about Ons Jabeur is how expressive she is, how she lets us in and takes us on an emotional journey with her. Of course, it was not a good thing for her in that match that her shoulders were so deeply slumped and she looked ashen-faced, as you said. I mean, quite often from the press seats, while it's a really good spot to watch the match from, it's not a great spot for reading body language and seeing expressions. Yet, I felt I knew exactly what was going on with Ons Jabeur. I could read her like a book from there without seeing any close-ups. Of course, that's not a good thing, but it was what was going on in her head, which is exactly what you described, that was the not good thing. I know there was some debate on the BBC's coverage, David, which featured Kim Clijsters, about whether she should have been faking that body language, fake positivity, do a Tiger Tim fist pump, even if you're not feeling it. Do a Kevin Anderson.
He's the one I always think of.
Why does he keep coming up? But who am I to disagree with Kim Clijsters? Personally, I don't think that's the answer. I think perhaps she could have had a bit more of a poker face, been a bit less expressive, but I don't think proactively faking how you're feeling is the answer for a player like Jabeur, who is all about expression and feeling. But
can you train yourself to fake it? In the moment, I don't see how you can. Like, on the spot, if you're feeling like that, if you panic, I've had panic attacks, you don't suddenly start, oh, I feel great, everybody. You know, you often say to me, you're not feeling good, are you? I can see on your face. I can tell. Don't care, you haven't got a poker face, all the rest of it. And I think that's probably the same with her. But what Kim was saying, and here's a player who has reached four Grand Slam finals and had all the same dreams and been just as popular as Ons Jabeur and everybody willing her to win. And she freely admits she kind of froze on all of those four occasions. And she said, the hardest thing for me was to have got to those positions and not played the tennis I need to play for them to beat me. They didn't even need to. And that really was hard for me to take. I just couldn't do it. And she said, I do feel like looking from the outside in. And I mean, I think she's pretty close to Ons Jabeur. After the last two matches, she's told how Ons Jabeur would call her to the locker room just before she went out for a hug.
It happened today.
Yeah.
After the match, she went to the locker room to find Ons Jabeur.
Yeah. Mm. And she's obviously a great support for her. But Kim was saying, look, I think it's not just about making yourself feel better, which maybe you can't do with that, but tell the other player that you're not done, because she's just gaining confidence right now. And there was a period when Jabeur's brief resurgence came in the second set when she did start to play better. I thought that was the most impressive Vondrousova, because she didn't allow it. She stood with her, toe-to-toe. And the better it came at her, she just stood up to it. And she snuffed out that comeback. And it was blooming impressive from her. I don't know whether you can learn it, Catherine. I don't know whether you can teach yourself to act if you're not that person. But I think that may be at least something to look into post this for Jabeur.
In terms of Jabeur's conversation with Kim Clijsters after the match, I got the sense that it was, on the one hand, a great comfort. You know, she said, you know, they hugged it out and, you know, being in the company of Kim Clijsters, who's been through the same experience, must be helpful. But I think she was also keen to point out that Clijsters had lost four. And it was almost like, oh, am I going to have to do this again, like, before I get another one? I think there was a sense that it could get worse.
She didn't look ready to do it again.
No.
She had a face of, how can this get worse? Mm.
And the other thing that we should mention, which for anyone who watched our preview show to this final, which...
If you didn't watch it at the time, don't go back. Don't watch it now.
No.
We don't come out of it great.
No. No.
There are some takes that haven't aged brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can delete YouTube comments.
Yeah. Turns out Martina Navratilova knew more than us about tennis.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah. But something that broke during that show, which we talked about, was the fact that Ons Jabeur had to change her outfit and stop her practice this morning because she was warming up on centre court in all black. And, of course, if you're playing on one of the match courts here, you have to be in all white. And we sort of reacted to that live on that show, and we felt a little bit, oh, my goodness, you know, who knows? It could be nothing, but it felt like something. And the more I thought about that, the more I felt like it was the kind of thing that, if we were looking back on this final in 10 years on an episode of Tennis Relived, we would talk about, it would be like the signs were there before the match.
It felt like a plot twist in a Netflix episode.
Yeah. And like she said, she woke up extremely stressed this morning and just forgot about the all-white rule. And the fact that she forgot, the fact that she wasn't clear in her thinking, the fact that no one in her team was clear in their thinking to tell her either, that just suggests to me that there was an awful lot of stress in that camp today and not conducive to playing your best tennis in, you know, the biggest match of your life, for one of them.
Just on the Kim Clijsters thing, I wonder how crucial that relationship could be, whether it even could become formalised in some way. You know, Andy Murray getting Ivan Lendl on board, that was very specifically about being in the situation of having lost four Grand Slam finals, exactly as Ivan Lendl had done.
That's true. Been there, done it. Get some help from somebody who knows what it's like. It almost feels a little bit like she's doing that job, or she's doing it informally. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely imagine something like that. I think Kim genuinely cares for her and wants what's best for her, and I think she really does empathise. And, you know, we've been in commentary, Kim and I, a few times, and I've had occasion to say, be honest, Kim, when you were in a semi-final or a final, does it feel different? And she said, absolutely. You know, you go out with so many doubts that you don't have in the other rounds. And you are trying to find a way to feel like yourself. And that's what I got from Ons Jabeur today. She just didn't feel like herself.
Mm-hmm. She didn't feel like the player who at the start of the tournament was talking about just enjoying herself. The irony is that it was Vondroušová today who was talking about how much she enjoyed the match. She said her first Grand Slam final in 2019, she said, "I was crushed by Ash Barty and Rabbit in her headlights." She said she came off court that day and thought to herself, if she ever got back in that situation, she would just enjoy herself. And I'm so pleased for her that she was able to do. She was like, even if I'd lost today, I would be able to say that I'd enjoyed myself. And it just felt so ironic because, of course, it's easier to say than to do. But that was Ons Jabeur's plan for this fortnight, and it's what got her in this position. And it just felt like in all respects she lost sight of that plan today and panicked and rushed. I know she quite plays quickly through between points, and I love that about her. I'm so here for players that play quickly. It's one of my bugbears. I don't know if you know, but I don't like faff. If I mention that,
has suggested itself. Yeah.
But it was startling how quickly she was playing today. At 4-all in the first set, she lost serve. And honestly, I looked down at my laptop to make a note, and she'd lost sort of 3 points in that time. It was like a landslide falling away from her. And again, just another illustration of her not thinking clearly. And Billie Jean King was in the BBC television studio after the match, and she was asked, "What are your thoughts for Ons Jabeur right now?" And I'm sure she'll have more that she gives her privately, because they have a good relationship, don't they? But she said she needs to calm down and not go for the lines so much, which was an interesting take, I thought. You know, in a final, she said, aim, if you want to go for a big shot, aim a couple of feet inside the line. Don't go for the actual line.
Mm. Yeah, a Taylor Swift song and piercing tennis analysis is what we aspire to be from Billie Jean King there.
Perfection.
But I think that's a real... I hadn't thought about that, actually, in terms of Vondroušová sort of doing on the court what Ons Jabeur's thing should be, you know. And honestly, I'm sort of starting to wonder now, like, what is a grass court player anymore? Because Markéta Vondroušová could not be more different to Elena Rybakina, last year's Wimbledon champion. You know, I just had that thought today that, you know, a lefty, righty, a big serve, not a big serve, topspin forehand, flat forehand, slice, backhand, heavy. You know, it's complete opposites. And Vondroušová had managed to make that game of hers really work on this surface and make it make sense. You know, now it feels like, yeah, of course she can play on grass. But I don't think anyone really thought that she was a contender here 3 weeks ago, and that element of being able to adapt that game to a different surface, that's what we've always felt about Ons Jabeur. And it's so tough for her.
Vondroušová up to 10 in the live rankings, fifth in the race.
Yeah, there was a great line from Sean Wertheim on Twitter. Started the tournament as the 7th best Czech and ending it as the 10th best in the world. Like, what a wild tennis country.
She is going to put us in some pickles in predictions and mixes in the future, isn't she? Because I still think she's going to have bad results.
Yeah, and I think she can get better in some ways too. I think she is the new Petra Kvitova in many ways. I mean, okay, different type of game, not as spectacular a ball striker, etc. But absolutely somebody who can win a title or lose in the first round, and will probably do both of those quite a lot most seasons. Or will this be the making of her? You know, that's another thing we haven't considered. The last time she reached a Grand Slam final, it was only 6 months later that the pandemic came along, and she's obviously had horrible injuries. Maybe there is a really consistent player in there if she's given a decent run of health and a sort of love of being in the conversation. You know, we've heard Barbora Krejčíková, somebody who's won a Grand Slam title, not wanting to be dismissed from the conversation, wanting to be part of that. Well, maybe Vondroušová has those sort of ambitions too. I think probably this is going to take some processing for her to work out, well, what do I want my career to be? How? Because some players, you know, that is such a toll to try to be relentlessly at your best. Some players cannot do that, and they need a break, and they can come and go, and they're okay with that. I mean, I always remember somebody saying that about Fernando Verdasco when he had his run to the semi-finals of the Australian Open and he nearly beat Nadal. That's great, but are you prepared to do what Nadal does in order to maximise what you can do? And I'm not sure, and the person said to me, I'm not sure he's prepared to do that because it's blooming mentally exhausting. So we'll find out who Marketa Vondrousova is in the years to come, health permitting, obviously.
See what he's done there. He's actually evaded making any kind of prediction about who Marketa Vondrousova is going to turn out to be.
Well, I really don't know.
Fine by me, David. I'm not prepared to either.
I am at a loss, really, with her. I do feel like Kim Clijsters gives me hope for Ons Jabeur because, let's not forget, she did win on the fifth attempt. And she won comfortably in the end in the final of the US Open that she won in 2005. And then she won three more after having her first child. So she is a perfect example because it was quite similar, I think. Mm. She would get so tightly wound up. She was so loved. Mm. And there were all these questions, when are you going to do it? And all the rest of it. And she found a way.
I think it would be interesting because, in a way, Vondrousova's kind of secret weapon, in a way, has been how sort of mercurial and mysterious she is. Like, I think she's going to actually want to try and keep that vibe. Like, I don't think she's that interested in the celebrity of it all that will, you know, attention will invariably come with becoming Wimbledon champion. But I think she will try and, as much as she can, keep it on the sort of lower end. In a way that I don't think Barbora Krejcikova's... Okay, her profile has raised quite a lot in the sport, but I don't think it's sort of really dramatically changed her life becoming Roland Garros champion. I think Vondrousova is going to try and do that and remain slippery and remain sort of tricky. I think she thrives in that environment. I don't think she wants necessarily huge show courts right from the start of every tournament. You know, she'll get higher billing, but I think it plays to her advantage to be underrated and be almost a bit not forgotten about, but just I don't know. But whether she can maintain that after this will be a question, I suppose.
It was a big topic of discussion at the start of the match that it was played under the roof. At the time the match started, there was play on all the other outdoor courts. And people were expecting, I think, play to start on centre court with the roof open. A statement from the club on this. They said, we've been monitoring the weather forecast and in light of the yellow weather warning issued, we've taken the decision to close the roof on centre court and number one today. And a little further from them, they said, the weather forecast today is challenging and indicates we may see scattered showers at short notice and high winds. Given this, we have taken the decision to close the roof on centre court and number one court today to allow for the smooth progression of the matches on these courts and to avoid disruption to matches part way through. We will always take the decision we feel is in the best interest of the championships and for the benefit of our players and guests. Given the weather forecast today, we have taken the decision to close the roof on centre and number one, which we believe is the best decision in light of the circumstances. And in the early stages of that final, there's a tweet from John Wertheim of the Tennis Channel, and he said, for what it's worth, from one hearsay source, he had heard that the roof is closed because of concerns that in the event of rain, the roof might not operate in 45 mile per hour winds, which is what was potentially forecast. And he said he expected the club to clarify after the match. And we did put that to the club and they said that was one factor as part of a series of considerations. When the match started under the roof, I was really doing that emoji. I was like, this seems really bizarre to me. But I'm glad we know that about the potential for issues with the roof in the winds that were forecast. I think actually the winds weren't quite as bad as some of the apocalyptic weather warnings were suggesting. But we were told that it was going to be bad today. So I'm glad we know about that. Was it a factor in how the match played out?
Could be. I would be surprised, probably, the way the two players were out there. I just think one was playing well and one wasn't, and one was handling it and one wasn't. But absolutely, conditions like that can become a factor in any match, can't they? They could have really discomforted Vondrousova. Maybe she's not a wind player, for instance. Some players like it, others don't. It is an interesting one, though, isn't it? Because as an occasion, it meant the guarantee of perfect conditions. You're indoors. There is no wind. It's nice for everybody. It's reliable. It doesn't mess up TV coverage. Remember that Nadal-Federer French Open match we had? That was a total non-entity because the ball was flying out all over the place. On the other hand, this is billed as an outdoor tennis event where conditions are meant to be a factor. And there were matches going on all around the grounds. So, you know, the roof element is a mitigating factor to that. I mean, health and safety has to come first in all of those sort of situations. I suppose you might want to say, well, shouldn't you have a roof that works no matter what the weather? But that is quite freakish here in the UK to get 45 miles an hour winds. Personally, I'm okay with shutting the roof to try to get the best occasion for the match. But then, given that, I'd probably like to be saying I'm not being quite so strong on it being an outdoor event. If you're going to insist it's an outdoor event, then you probably need to be prepared to maintain those outdoor conditions maybe more than they are. But I'm still glad that it got played indoors in the end because it was a tennis match and not potentially a freak show.
Likewise, this tennis podcast recording, which could also have been a freak show.
Yeah, we've advertised ourselves as an outdoor show.
It would have been a bad hair day had we recorded outside today. Trust me on that, folks. So no one's prepared to stick their neck on the line about what on earth the future holds for Marketa Vondrousova, other than predictions horror.
And a new tattoo, which she won't disclose.
She won't disclose what that is.
One for her coach.
They're both getting tattoos, I think, in London tomorrow. Mm. Might be the plan. There was cat chat in the press conference, obviously. Didn't learn anything new about Frankie. I feel like I know everything there is to know about Frankie.
Yeah, only that I think the cat sitter's getting stood down and Mum's going over tomorrow.
Mum's coming in, yeah.
To look after
Cuddles
the cat.
For Mum. Lucky Mum. Does anybody want to put their neck on the line about Jabeur and whether she will ever become a Grand Slam and or Wimbledon champion?
Yes.
She will.
I would like to.
Thank goodness you said that. And you're the positive one.
Well, I would like to say that, and I said it exactly the same 12 months ago, that my original view of Ons Jabeur will never be in the mix in my lifetime was proved wrong a year ago, regardless of the fact that she lost, because the definition of being in the mix is, would I be surprised if she won the title? Well, I wouldn't have been surprised if she'd have won last year or this year, because she's that good now. She's improved, she's packaged her game, she's beaten Aryna Sabalenka and Elena Rybakina and Petra Kvitova and Bianca Andreescu from a set down. These are Grand Slam title winning performances. It's just she didn't finish the job. Now, the best thing she can do is keep getting back in the position, and that was the most interesting thing that Kim Clijsters said. You can do all the psychology work you want off court. You can talk to anybody. You can talk to me. You can talk to all these people. But they haven't done it. Yes, Kim Clijsters has, so she's perhaps the best person to talk to. But it doesn't matter how many times you hear what maybe you should do. Until you can handle it in your skin, you don't know how to do it. And the only way she's going to learn is keep putting herself in that position. There's a question mark over whether how many times she'll be able to, because how many times do you beat those four in a row? But she's shown she can. I back her to get in that position again, and I back her to eventually figure out how to do it. Maybe not here, but somewhere. I back her.
Can you say all that to her in a lift? that would help, I think. Yeah, and an interesting point about the succession of great players that she beat along the way. I do wonder whether that slightly took its toll. That was a draining effort to have to beat so many players. You know, I think we often look at the positive side of that. You're in form, you're matched tough, but she'd given a lot of herself over several days. And if she was not quite at her most energetic, and you know, she wasn't quite as, didn't have quite as much in the tank today, combined with everything she was feeling, I think that probably showed in the performance that she gave.
I don't feel quite as optimistic.
It's a lot for her to overcome.
Andy Murray, Kim Clijsters.
Yeah.
Getting closer.
Definitely. Well,
but
I don't know if she is getting closer.
She didn't get closer today.
That's the thing. Like, Murray said getting closer because that was probably the first Grand Slam final where he really felt like he had put his game on the court and played well. He lost to, at that time, the one everyone considered the greatest of all time.
I disagree. I think she's getting closer because of who she beat to get there. Last year she beat Tatiana Maria. This time she's gone a bit... No, I mean, look, Tatiana Maria did brilliantly to get to the semi-finals, but she is not Arina Sabalenka or Elena Rybakina.
But it's a specific Grand Slam final problem that she seems to have. It's, you know, she'd reached two Grand Slam finals. I don't know. I really hope so.
I think I fall closer to Matt. I'm perhaps not quite as doom and gloom, but I don't share your conviction. But I'm so glad you have it, David.
I'm hanging on to it.
Yeah, I honestly, I hope Ons Jabeur has a David Law in the room with her right now to hype her up.
Maybe give it a few days. you don't want to hear this nonsense about 4 hours after, do you?
Shall we talk about some of the other results, some of them final results, some of them trophy-winning results that we've had today? David, you have just seen... Well, you've seen two doubles tournaments reach their conclusion in the last hour. We had Alfie Hewitt and Gordon Reid winning a fifth men's wheelchair doubles title, playing in their seventh consecutive final here. They beat Takito Oda and Takuya Miki 3-6, 6-love, 6-3. And you also watched Neil Skubsky and Wesley Kuhlhoff finally break their Grand Slam duck and beat Marcel Granollers, Horacio Zaballos 6-4, 6-4 on centre.
Yeah, I was supposed to be commentating on that one in the second set, but the way the two matches fell, I ended up doing the whole of the wheelchair doubles final, which had 10,000 people watching, and it was an incredibly good, tense match. The Japanese pair won the first set 6-3, and then Takito Oda, who's only 17 years of age, he only turned 17 in May, I think he ran out of gas. Like, he had a real sort of energy drop, and he'd won the singles semi-final earlier today against Gordon Reid, so now faces Alfie Hewitt tomorrow. And he just sort of went to pieces, really. And it was 6-love second set. They were broken for 1-love in the third, and then he got a second wind. And the third set was breaks of serve galore, and Reid and Hewitt just trying to haul themselves over the line, and the crowd really trying to haul them over themselves. And the match point was just incredibly tense. Long extended rally, moon balls going back and forth, the movement of the players to circle and get back in position for the next shot. And then the left-handed Reid throws in a drop shot, Alcaraz or Jabeur style, on match point. And I'm describing this, is it going to be the one that wins them the title? And then the crowd just go up as one when it bounces three times. And because in the wheelchair singles and doubles, you get two bounces. And you had this moment of me going, will they get there? Yes! And them throwing their rackets into the air at the same time, both players, and the crowd going up as one. And it was just amazing. It was amazing.
And Alfie Hewitt might need to keep riding that wave.
Yeah.
Mightn't he? Because he's got another chance at the Wimbledon singles title tomorrow. He'll take on Takito Oda, the French Open champion, 17 years old, the player to beat at the moment. It's the only Grand Slam, the only singles Grand Slam missing from Alfie Hewitt's trophy cabinet, and he served for it four times last year.
Well, I was covering that as well last year, and it was so heart-wrenching. So, look, I mean, I kind of feel like Takito Oda, you're going to win about 10 of these and more. You're only 17. Mate, you know, let him have this one. I mean, he won't, obviously, but it would mean the world to Hewitt. I spoke to him in Australia when he'd won the singles title there, and his whole year is about this match tomorrow. I mean, he did the most extraordinary off-season of training, and he said he had this in mind the whole time. So that was amazing. And then 5 minutes later, you had the end of the doubles final, and very similar scenes, and I guess maybe even more emotional because Neil Skupski and Wesley Kuldoff had never won one before. And I mean, Neil Skupski was just lost for words. His brother was in the box. His brother Ken, who he was doubles partner with, his elder brother, and who now helps to coach him. And he'd taken his family off to Ibiza on a holiday yesterday, and they wasn't supposed to be here. And he just sort of settled them in on holiday, and then comes straight back to watch this final. And there he was in the box to watch it, and just seeing Neil unable to talk when they came to him in the interview, just told you how he was feeling. And great scenes.
So chuffed for them. That could change Neil Skupski's life, becoming a Wimbledon champion, being from the UK. Mm. Massive, massive deal for him. Yeah. I mean, they've already had a fantastic career on tour together for the past couple of years, but this is next level in terms of life-changing achievements. Deirdre de Groot won her 19th Grand Slam title and her 5th Wimbledon title today. She beat Jiska Griffin 6-2, 6-1. She is only 26 years old, Deirdre de Groot. Imagine how many she's going to win. That's fearsome stuff from her. The men's quad wheelchair doubles was won by Sam Schroeder and Niels Vink. They beat Heath Davidson and Robert Shaw 7-5, 6-love. The quad singles final will be between Heath Davidson, who beat Sam Schroeder today 6-4, 2-6, 6-3, and Davidson will play Niels Vink, who beat Donald Rampardi 6-1, 6-love. That's a beatdown. So Davidson against Vink in the quad singles final. And some junior news for you. Henry Searle, the 17-year-old Brit, will play Yaroslav Demin in the boys' final. Demin having beaten our man Darwin Blanche. Don't know. We can't really claim him, can we? It was a Mary Carrillo tip-off.
It was a Mary Carrillo tip-off via Lindsay Davenport. Mm.
But anyway,
pretty good tip-off.
Yeah.
He was a set-up Darwin Blanche, wasn't he? But Demin, who is nearly 3 years older, I think, than Darwin Blanche, came back to win. So he'll play the Brit Henry Searle in the boys' final tomorrow. And the girls' final is Clervy Ngunu, who turned 17 on Wednesday. She'll face the Czech Nikola Bartunkova, who pulled off the upset of all upsets. She beat Alina Kornaeva in the semi-finals today. Kornaeva, who was in the Djokovician calendar slam position, having won the Australian Open title, beating Mira Andreeva in that final, and winning the French Open girls title as well.
Mm. And a stat from Stu Fraser on Henry Searle: if he wins the boys' singles tomorrow, he'll become the first British winner of the event since Stanley Matthews, the son of the footballer, and that was in 1962 that he won. Of course, Jack Draper and Liam Brody in recent years have been in the final. So, yeah, great line there.
Yeah, it's good for the Brits to have Henry Searle. I don't know anything about Henry Searle.
From Wolverhampton. I know that.
Yeah, of course you know
that. I sort of rolled my eyes when I found out he was from Wolverhampton.
There are a disproportionate number of British male tennis players from the Birmingham area, I would say.
Yeah.
We're looking at one.
Tennis players.
Tennis characters.
People? Yes.
Members of the tennis family.
Members of the tennis family.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Right, tomorrow, final day of Wimbledon. We're hoping to be back outside tomorrow, folks. We have a full men's singles final preview show at midday tomorrow UK time, exclusively on YouTube. So we will save some hashtag content for that, and we'll take your questions on the live chat as well then. But we have a bit of time now to give our thoughts on world number one Carlos Alcaraz against world number two Novak Djokovic. David, you've had your 24 hours. I want heads on blocks, please.
But I've still got another 12 and another show.
No, last night you said I want 24 more hours.
Okay.
Here we are.
I am quite big on sleeping on things, you see. That served me so well today, didn't it?
We've got another preview show tomorrow. You're allowed to change your mind after a night's sleep, but I want to know how you feel right now.
Okay, right here, right now, I think it's going 5 sets. I think it's going all the way. That's
a half prediction.
Okay.
Who's going to win that 5th set?
I'm really on the fence.
Really?
I'm really...
That in itself is a prediction, to see it that close. Because I give Alcaraz...
You're letting him get away with that?
No, I will. I'm opening out the wider discussion.
I will tell you. But I think 5 sets, and I really do feel... I'll talk my way into one and then into the other in my head. But ultimately, I would go with Djokovic's experience.
Yeah, I give Alcaraz a decent chance, but I do see Djokovic as a firm-ish favourite. Any other surface, and I would see it differently. And I think, I said it earlier in the tournament, I see it as an 06, 07, 08 Federer-Nadal final progression. I think it might not take 3 for Alcaraz. I think he could lose this one in 4 or 5 and come back next year and win it. Potentially against Djokovic, but I think it might just be too much to do tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, pre-tournament, I think maybe we all had an Alcaraz-Djokovic final, and we all had Djokovic winning it. Nothing on the Djokovic side of things for me has changed. Alcaraz has probably looked a bit better than I thought he would. You know, wins against Berrettini and Rune and Medvedev, all in extremely convincing fashion. I thought he might struggle a bit more, I suppose, to get through to the final. But we say it, don't we, so often. How many times have we previewed a final of a Grand Slam and the person that Novak Djokovic has been playing, we've thought they're playing fantastic tennis. And then we see them play Novak Djokovic and it's like, oh, they can't do the things that they've been doing all tournament.
Tsitsipas, start of the year.
Right.
Alcaraz in the semi-final.
Federer, numerous times. You know,
Nadal in Australia.
Right.
So many times.
I absolutely just have to go with Novak Djokovic. David said it, his experience. He hasn't lost on centre court for 10 years. Maybe another player who needs Andy Murray in their ear. If Ons Jabeur does, maybe Carlos Alcaraz does. How do you beat Novak Djokovic on centre court?
With each of them, you don't know how well they're playing until they play one another, because they have so separated from the rest of the field. And it may be that we find out tomorrow that Djokovic has separated, that there's Djokovic, Alcaraz, the rest. But until we see that, it's them completely separated from the rest. I see there being, well, on yesterday's evidence on grass, a huge gap to the rest, and maybe on other surfaces as well, although Casper Ruud says hi. I keep bringing up Casper Ruud, I can't help myself. But until we see it, we don't know how they're playing, because that's the test.
I agree. Yeah. And just on in terms of what they ask of one another, Alcaraz, I think, is the only man who can really discomfort Djokovic with his speed, his ferocity of ground stroke, and his general talent. And I think Djokovic is the only man who can get Alcaraz off balance and wrong-foot him several times a game and make him have to do superhero moves in order to get back in rallies. Now, sometimes, usually he's doing superhero moves to finish rallies. I think Sinner's done a bit of that to Alcaraz. He wrong-foots him, but Djokovic is another level. So that's why they're so great a prospect, because head-to-head is the only way you get that real challenge for them both at the moment.
Kim Clijsters may or may not have won the women's invitational doubles today. Are these finals? She and Martina Hingis beat Joe Konta and Sanja Mirza. It says round robin. But
she did tell me earlier today that she was playing a not before 5 p.m. match, but it was going to, I think, follow the doubles final, or maybe they're
going
to. Oh,
no,
it's
in progress. Sorry, yeah. My mistake. Kim Clijsters, Martina Hingis, currently a setup on Joe Konta and Sanja Mirza in what may or may not be some kind of final.
Yes.
What other? We've had Cara Black and Caroline Wozniacki.
I saw a match point in that.
soon to retire from Legends.
And go on the tour.
They beat Katie O'Brien and Agnieszka Radwanska.
Yeah.
What a partnership.
Not what you expect.
Any sense from one point how Wozniacki was looking?
Fit. That's all I can say. But she always looks fit. She always looks like she hasn't missed a day in the gym for the last 20 years. So, I mean... No,
fair enough.
Not at all.
The Bryan brothers have won. Surprise, surprise. They beat Tommy Haas and Mark Philippoussis again in what may or may not have been a final. Francesca Schiavone and Roberta Vinci. Jürgen Meltzer and Gilles Muller are playing here in the Legends. They beat Dom Inglot and Xavier Malisse.
I mean, they have had their work cut out these last few days to get these matches played any old way, haven't they? They've played a load of indoor stuff and everything.
Mansell Bahrami and Marion Bartoli beat Greg Rozeski and Conchita Martinez today.
Won't read too much into that.
Look, I've done my time on the Champions Tour. It's a wild ride.
I still think it's unfair that the Bryan brothers get to play together. Talk about experience. Half of these pairs have never met.
I want to see the Bryans against one another.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That's the fun stuff.
Yeah, come on, lads.
One Bryan with Mansell Bahrami. And one Bryan with Greg Rozeski.
They did always say, we will never play against each other. But come on, boys, you've retired now. You can.
Well, it's not your choice, is it? The club decides.
And they're probably thinking, well, you can't have the Bryan brothers singular.
You can.
I agree with you.
It's what the people want to see. Right. I can't believe we've only got one more day of Wimbledon. Two more shows. One podcast, two live YouTube shows. We'll be back at the conclusion of play tomorrow with our show as usual. And we'll have a preview show at midday on YouTube. The link for that will be on our Twitter and on our Instagram. And we'd love it if you joined us. We have our Wimbledon mascot, Erin. Hello, lovely Erin.
Right, Erin.
We have our mascots, Dave. It's got Maisie.
All right, Maisie. Didn't go our way today, but you know.
Didn't go many people's way today.
We got won over by the emotion.
I've got Xenia and Matt's got Darwin. Sad scenes for everyone. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We had to request some emergency Billie Jean content after seeing Ons Jabeur's speech on court.
Billie Jean the dog content.
Billie Jean the dog content, yes, to cope with the deep, deep Ons Jabeur sadness. And it did not disappoint.
Oh,
she's sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. They are legends, all of them. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We've got Celeste Byrne from Sydney, Australia.
Celeste.
Hi, Celeste.
Sydney, home of the United Cup, or one of the homes of the United Cup.
Yeah.
Celeste.
No, I don't have any tennis names.
Do you remember that band called Daphne and Celeste from the early noughties? Matthew does. We're the same era.
Feels like a bit of a kind of shortened version of Constant Lestien.
No, it doesn't.
David just trying to get Constant Lestien into any conversation.
And I've managed it.
Celeste.
Thanks, Hannah.
Celeste is not happy with that shout-out.
Sorry, Celeste.
Instead of a tennis Celeste, you've produced Constant Lestien.
Come on, I can see the link there.
Celeste ain't coming back for more next year. Thank you, Celeste, very much.
I can tell that there was a Jenny Byrne who played tennis. And the reason I know that is because of some King of the 90s related stuff today, which I can't say too much because David hasn't answered his question yet. But
subscribe to the newsletter.
Yeah.
It's tense.
It is tense. Second shout out is for Kirsten de la Tower, who is originally from New Jersey, but now is in St. John's Wood in London.
Oh, very good. We have a lot of listeners in New Jersey.
We do.
Bruce is putting the word about.
Do we understand that phenomenon?
No.
No. We love it. Yeah. No, we love
Kirsten Flipkins.
Yes.
Who did actually
retire this tournament.
And Kim Clijsters was there to pay tribute to her. Because
was she actually?
Kim is just feel-good vibes all round. Mm. And she's great to commentate with, by the way.
Good for her. Thank you, Kirsten.
And finally, we have Rachel Engelke from Connecticut, which is tremendous because it gives us a chance to correct or, in fact, come up with a tennis Rachel, because we failed miserably. When was that? Yesterday?
Yes. Yesterday, I think, yeah.
And we've been told Rachel...
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quillen, who was from Australia.
Who is a name I did know and I did think of at the time, but I didn't think she was a tennis player and I was concerned about completely humiliating myself. So I thought I'd wait until it was confirmed.
This was on the episode where David had been consumed by an umbrella.
Yes,
so already
I had.
Do.
Eaten by an umbrella.
Do watch that back. If you're going to re-watch a show, I'd definitely recommend that one rather than the preview show.
Yeah, and I would also recommend cameraman Matthew's edit of it, which is...
There's a slow moment there.
Which is on our Instagram.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Great.
It's never leaving Instagram, no matter how many times I try and delete it.
Thank you, Rachel. I think Rachel interacts with this, doesn't she, on social media, and she seems lovely.
Rachel was... in Indian Wells to meet us.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Lovely.
Which was really nice.
Yeah.
Lovely. No,
yeah,
Pam to throw us under the bus today.
No.
To our meet and greets in Indian Wells. We loved them. We loved them. They're just tiring.
No, you're throwing us under the bus.
I'm explaining further.
Okay.
That's a humble brag, isn't it? I'm
tired because there were so many people.
Tired from all the fans.
Saw my commitments.
Right, we have one more of these to go. Well, kind of two. One more podcast, two more live shows. We have absolutely loved them. Thank you for watching online, for listening to the pod, however you've been enjoying this podcast. If you have been enjoying it, do hit like and subscribe on our YouTube. Do leave us an Apple Podcasts review and subscribe to the newsletter. Tell your friends. If you'd like to become a friend of the podcast, that is how you not only support the show year round to do what we do, which is weekly shows year round and daily during all the slams, but it's also how you get access to all the boco. And that, for anybody that isn't young, cool and hip like me, is bonus content. And there is a lot of it. There's a lot coming your way next week when you're experiencing your post-Wimbledon blues. We will inundate you with boco. So if you'd like to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast...
I can't hear it without David.
If you'd like to become a friend of the Tennis nonsense. Podcast, the link to do
Did
that...
Did you come up with boco, or is that a thing?
I heard it on a thing.
Okay.
No, she's continuing to try to make it happen.
I'm sure. I really convinced the kids of saying it.
Not even my kids.
What was I saying? I'm trying to do the plugs that
Sorry.
You tell me to do, David.
Sorry,
the link to become a friend of the pod is in our show notes. And who wouldn't want to be a friend of us young, cool hipsters? Most importantly, thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow at midday and at the end of the day.